There we go. It is 10:10. The board is back from break, returning to the board meeting on Tuesday, April 23rd. Just to ensure everybody is back, Dr. Bustillo, I'll do a quick roll call of board members and staff. Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Dr. King?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton, I see him, but I'll come back. Dr. Hike?
Here.
And sorry, Ms. Chaffetz, my microphone was not working, but I'm here and I can hear you now.
And Mr. Barton is here. Fantastic. Okay, and board staff, Ms. Crowley?
Here.
Ms. Bryant?
Here.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
And Ms. Sinish?
Here.
Ms. Sinish has joined the meeting when we return from break at 10:10. And my name is Judy Chepius. And Mr. Harris is also with us as AAG. Dr. Bustillo, meeting is yours.
We will move to the agenda items for informal hearing. This is a reminder that the board meeting is being recorded. This is case number 2377, Jelaine Florians, PTA. Since we just called roll, do we need to re-roll call?
We're good. Thanks, Karen.
Right. Ms. Florians on the line?
She said she was going to be here. Checking my email. I heard from her last night, but nothing this morning.
I'm here.
Okay, great.
I was having problems with the phone.
Yep. Are you represented by counsel?
No, I am not.
Okay, so this interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board statutes or rule has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions. Issue a decree of censure, place restriction on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions. Issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board statute or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of a license or certificate, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. So we'll swear in our witnesses.
Dr. Sinish, Ms. Florians, will you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Ms. Florians?
Yes.
Ms. Sinish?
I do.
Thank you.
And a reminder to everyone to please refer to the patient by initials only. And we'll have Dr. Sinish give us a brief overview.
Case 2377 was brought before the board at its February 27th, 2024 meeting, and the board voted to move it to an informal hearing, including all allegations of potential violations set forth in the investigative report. It is alleged that Jelaine Florian's PTA did not report a change in patient status to her supervising PT, and that she fraudulently documented that she reported the change in status to her supervising PT. The director of nursing at Haven Home Health also alleged that Ms. Florian's fraudulently documented information in the notes of two other patients. Ms. Florian's was sent a copy of the investigative file. The potential statute violations identified for you to consider include ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegating by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and as it relates to R-424-303 patient care management. And ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Florians, do you have an opening statement, or would you be willing to answer questions?
Might as well ask the questions. I have nothing to.
Great. I know we've read this. This is Dr. Bustia. I know we've read this, but can you just kind of walk us through briefly what happened the day you went to see the patient?
In regards to what patient? Are you referring to DW?
DW.
It was a Sunday. I was planning on seeing her around 4 o'clock. I called the night before to the daughter to let her know, because prior to getting this patient, I was told that the patient needed ample time to get herself up and to answer the door. Well over an hour and a half, according to the conversation I had with the therapist that assigned me to the patient. And so I called the night before. I don't know if the patient got the message or knew I was coming on Sunday. But I arrived roughly around 4 o'clock, got there. The door was not unlocked as arranged, you know, the night before. So I called, the daughter to let her know that the door was not unlocked. Got off the phone. The daughter called the patient, and they had a conversation, and daughter got back to me, and she said her mom was okay, but she was tired, and she was having difficulties getting up and didn't feel that she wanted to answer the door. So I proceeded to, you know, look through the window while I was waiting, could see her sitting in her chair, went around, observed, you know, to see if there was other ways of entry. The day it was like well over 100 degrees, so I was, you know, kind of concerned of the patient, because when I was there prior, the conditions were not favorable, but the patient liked it that way. And so I was in conversation with the daughter in regards to, you know, her safety and if I needed to call 911, you know, to get her. And the daughter said it wasn't necessary. And I then proceeded to, because she was like, there was a caregiver, I guess, a young girl that lived next door and who I never saw. And I went to the house, attempted to see her, to see if, you know, she was available. There was no car in the driveway. I then went back to the house. The daughter said she would call the caregiver, and she got nothing but I believe she said it was just an answering machine and nobody was answering the call. So I proceeded to see if I could, you know, like I said, looking at safety issues and concerns that I had based on the one appointment I had with the patient to the daughter to say that, you know, the conditions are not favorable for, you know, this 90, I believe she was like 91, 92 years old. And in the discussion that I had with the daughter, she said that, you know, she was having difficulties getting her mom to, you know, get care or to even move out of her home. And I know that she said that, you know, she would never leave her house. And And, you know, it was just a bad situation. And I've been told prior times from Haven that, you know, you can't force them. You can't make them do anything. And that is also what the daughter was struggling with, was that I guess her doctor said that cognitively she was making, you know, her decisions without impairment. And so the daughter, who was out of state, you know, struggled with the same, you know, situation of, you know, having the daughter, or I'm sorry, the patient, you know, in a better scenario. And so we had an ongoing conversation, and I tried, you know, talking to the patient through the window, and she, you know, ignored me. And I just was like, okay, you know, do you want me to call 911? And the daughter was like, no, we're coming out in mid-October. And I was like, I don't think mid-October. And again, this was like in September. And I said, I think something needs to be done. You know, this situation needs more attention than waiting till mid-October. And so I proceeded to have conversation, and I gave her some information based on, you know, maybe some assistance, you know, to start off with, that if, you know, she could reach out to a resource that I have that helps, you know, find places or situations like this to assist her, because she was out of state. And so through the conversation, I was just telling her that, you know, even after the one visit I had with her, she was soiled. And I offered to, you know, part of therapy to walk her to the bathroom to at least change the garment and clean her up a little bit. But she refused and stuff. So, you know, I guess the patient was her own self-worst enemy, in her own care and stuff. And I care about my patients, and I was there roughly 45 minutes to an hour. And again, in a neighborhood of not exactly a thing I should have been doing, but I was walking around the house to the areas that I could get to. And again, to a means of getting in. But again, the daughter was in contact with the mother, and she was just like, she just was refusing. And in conversation with the daughter even said that she always had issues with people coming into her home and, you know, people who would help her care for her, she would chase out and just, you know, be non-receptive to it. So it was very, very hard for her to have just anybody coming in. And so my thought was, maybe I upset her by bringing out the fact that, you know, she was soiled and, you know, that scenario, or she just didn't trust me coming into her house after 4 o'clock, you know, on a Sunday. And I don't know if she got a phone call that I was coming. So there was a lot going on with this patient as far as me getting into the house and everything. But when I was on the phone call with the daughter, I was expressing the needs of her safety and just in general, the needs of what the patient should have, and to bring it to her attention. And, you know, and so when I was with this conversation with her, I then received a notification from my own family that there was a medical issue with my father, who is in Idaho. And I responded to it, and then I got back to her, and we kind of were wrapping up, because the daughter, or I should say the patient, was not going to let me in. But I did bring in safety issues and like having a lockbox or something of a means of somebody, you know, getting in instead of it being, you know, with security doors and gates and all that stuff and on the windows and stuff. So, again, I must have asked the daughter numerous times if I should be calling 911.
Okay. And she said, so no. after that visit that mm-hmm. you spent 45 minutes to an hour, you mm-hmm. did not contact your PT or the home health agency regarding the patient?
No, because I was, you know, I've had similar situations like this. And when I did call into the office, they were saying there was nothing, you know, you did what you did and there was no means to, you know, any actions and stuff. So I then left. I had to take care of my father and then I got back later to address the note around, I believe it was like around 9 o'clock, because I knew that I wouldn't be able to talk to Lee about it because as far as with communications and stuff, it was, you know, I'd leave messages and sometimes I wouldn't, you know, get responses back or we would use an app called WhatsApp and, there were several, you know, times that I've reached out and got no response from anybody from the office or from the PT that I was like their patient and stuff. So my note initially was the start of communication. And when I tried to start it there, because I knew that if I called at 9 o'clock, it was useless. But I wanted to at least document and get what I did during the visit. And from my recollection of the note, I did not put anything fraudulent in that note. It was a communication note. It was to say, this is what happened. There was no vitals. It wasn't like I was pretending that I saw the patient
right.
and did a visit. That was not the case. The case of the matter was I documented what happened at that event. And again, there was nothing in it. Was everything that was explained that I even put it in the vitals that I could not give vitals because I was not able to get in and the patient was refusing to get up or she just, like I said, I don't know the mindset of that patient. And again, it's a 90-plus-year-old person who literally, again, I can't make them answer the door. I can't ask them. But when she said she was tired and she wasn't going to get up, there was nothing I could do. But I had to make sure that the daughter knew what was going on in that whole scenario. And that's what the brunt of that conversation was with her and then the exercises that we were doing and, based on what I saw in the first visit. And again, I even told her after I got off the phone call, I said, I will be calling you tomorrow to make sure that everything is okay. And
you were going to call the daughter again?
You're right. I was going to call the daughter.
You just talked about doing exercises. So but you didn't actually.
No. I was giving the exercises to the daughter. To the daughter. So that if she could either relay it to this so-called caregiver that was coming over or herself, if she was coming into town, because she even knows that her mom was getting weak and she needed help. But she was refusing. She was, according to the conversation I had with the daughter, which were, you know, very constructive and very informative based on what I got from the patient of her, you know, her status and her mindset from the daughter. And then the daughter also got an indication of what was going on in the home.
So why do you feel that the agency Haven reported this?
Well, like I said, I put in a little note prior to finishing up the documentation of that date. And it was a weird conversation. And I expressed this to Liz. I said, you know, there were certain situations when physically I was right next to at the same house of an appointment with Lee. And I went to go talk to him about this particular patient and then also some other patients, and he drove off from me. And he saw me. I mean, there was no way that he could not have seen me because I was standing by his Tesla and I was approaching it and he drove off. And I just was like kind of stunned by it. So I proceeded to go in because I was scheduled to see the patient, and the patient then told me that, oh no, Lee saw me and he had a change in, a cervical fracture, and he got the okay to take off his brace. And I said, so you saw him? And he's like, yeah. So then I knew I didn't have a visit. So I was like kind of wondering about that. And then I called Lee later that I informed him since the pandemic, I lost my job right at the pandemic, and coming out of the pandemic, it was very difficult for me to find work, and I was very fortunate to be working for Haven and to at least have a PRN job while still looking for, you know, a permanent job. And the biggest thing is that I saw every patient. I never did anything to say I went and saw a patient without seeing the patient.
Let's see if anyone else has any questions about this specific case, okay?
But, can I go back to the phone call that in regards to my employee? That's what I was trying to get to. So I told Lee that I finally found employment and that I got full time and benefits and just was elated. And his tone was really weird, but he said, what you need to do is you need to go into the office and you need to tell specifically, I had to tell Casey and Joanne. And he was very adamant that I go and tell them. And I was like, why do I have to go in and tell them? And he goes, just go and tell them. So I did. And when I went into the office, like I said, it was like a very cold, non-receptive, and they kind of looked at me, and it was a very uncomfortable exchange, which lasted like not even 2 minutes. And all of a sudden I was like, okay, I did that. And then that's when everything, when I told Lee, and then the whole thing with, telling him I got the job, and then all of a sudden things just got like more distant, more like, because it happened like just almost like I get my job and then all of a sudden this event happens and then this gets reported. And I just was like, you know, if you didn't want me to work for you anymore, you could have just terminated me or just take patients away from me because I was PRN. But it was those two that were in on the final call, which when I tried to explain the situation, I was not allowed to explain anything. They just took everything and were like not allowing me to interact with the supervising PTs on the patients. They were just like, you cannot do anything. And then the next morning, I then got terminated in a 5-minute phone call saying I was terminated. And I just was stunned because I was like, I didn't even get a chance to express the whole scenario that went on. And then also too, the supervising PTs that I worked with never reached out to me to find out what, especially when I'm working under their license, that all of a sudden they don't even want to get the, what happened and stuff. So it was like, I got judged and guilty without having this kind of interaction and to explain it and to go over it, because I've never ever submitted anything fraudulent ever in 24 years, because I hold myself at a standard that some people don't do, but I do. And I know that I never put anything into a chart or billing that wasn't accurate. And so all of a sudden, like I said, I go in and I say that I got a job, and then all of a sudden this all abrupts, you know, it just goes out of whack. and I'm still trying to figure it out. I mean, this has impacted me so much because I've done this for 24 years, and for the scrutiny of people who don't even know me and are making all assumptions to everyone and making me out to be like this, you know, bad person. When I lost my job in the pandemic, I then got cancer, and 2 days after I had my surgery, I was back interviewing because I wanted to get back to work.
Okay, let's try to stick to the
I just wanted to show you that my character is not what Haven is bringing to example.
Sure. Thank you. Does anyone else have questions?
Ms. Florence, I'm wondering about, as we have the video and have watched that, and we have mm-hmm. documents to include notes and evaluation. And when you think about your contact with Lee and Marissa in terms of your therapist, mm-hmm. I would like to know about the policies and procedures for Haven in terms of how you would communicate with them. I understand from the interview that there was this WhatsApp, and that you only, if I understand it correctly, had met Lee once, and the other time he drove off, if that's correct. So in terms of policies and procedures for Haven and communicating to the therapist, is can you describe that to me? Because it seems like in this case for DW, that didn't happen. So I want to have an idea. I understand things happened afterwards, and then, you know, you got back to writing the note at 9, but what would the policies and procedures say in terms of you contacting them, and when should you contact them?
There was never, you know, like when my orientation was with the company, it was very brief. You know, it was like, I got to say it was probably like 30 minutes, and then they sent me to shadow somebody, you know, to drive along for, you know, orientation. And there wasn't anything, you know, specifically like chain of command, but I knew that I've always contacted the PTs and stuff. And I know that I reached out to Marissa in regards to one patient, but never got a response back. And then with Lee on that one situation, like I said, I've always contacted him. But in this situation, I didn't look at it as a necessary, and it was my judgment because I was there. I didn't look at it as a change in medical status. I looked at it as the patient was just refusing to come to the door.
Okay. And then from evaluation, I read nothing about the patient being soiled, but it sounds like it was communicated to you that when he did the evaluation, the patient was incontinent,
mm-hmm.
And that he told the daughter that.
Yeah. It was a conversation. It was a conversation that I had with the daughter, who she kind of was given information, and she relayed it to me as to that, you know, she was soiled during the evaluation.
Does it? I'm sorry.
And so it was from the daughter who told me that that's what had occurred. Because I guess he just updated her saying, yeah, she was soiled. And I don't know if it was a communication as to, you know, was she soiled or how it came up. All I know is the daughter let me know that she was having incontinence issues and, you know, bowel issues and all that stuff. And so, like I said, when I was there, she was soiled, more urine. And so I was like, I asked her if she wanted to use, you know, to stand up and go to the bathroom, and we could maybe change the garment out, but she didn't want to do it. She just wanted to sit in there, and a chair was soiled, you know, from urine and stuff. So, it was just basic observation. You know, it was, you know, okay. You didn't have to be blind to
Yep. And does it seem odd to you that he listed her as standby assist in the transfers and that soiled in the evaluation and it would take an hour to open the door?
Yeah. And that's why, like I said, when he gave me the patient, I was going to go see, like I added her to my schedule list. And he was like, that's when the conversation came up about go talk to Joanne and Casey that I got a job. And so I burned some time by going into the office, pick up some supplies. And like I said, I had called the daughter. She needed to let the daughter know that, you know, that she needed time to, you know, and, you know, to unlock the door. And so, like I said, what I saw and, you know, and how she struggled to do her sit to stands from what I recall, it was not like pop up and answer the door. It was not that. It was, it would take her an effort to get up. And that's why, you know, in doing so, we did mostly, from what I remember of the visit, the first visit I had with her, we primarily did, you know, seated exercises. And
yeah,
she was
any documentation for anything else besides seated exercises that I saw in that first note.
Right, yeah. And that's all, you know, and like I said, we were trying to attempt to do, from what I remember, trying to do some sit to stands, but it was very, like I said, it was very taxing for her and she was very weak and stuff. So and then, like I said, after I reached out to the daughter, after this event happened, she said that the caregiver came over and, you know, the patient got up and ate her dinner and got herself ready for bed and stuff. So, you know, like I said, I did follow up and just to make sure everything. So I don't know if the daughter felt like, because I saw a certain situation, that she may feel like she's neglecting her mother or whatever. But the thing of the matter is I wanted to make sure that that patient was put in the best situation, which eventually the daughter and her husband drove and they were there like, I think, midweek. So instead of October, they were there and then they got to see. And from my understanding, because after that point, I was terminated and I didn't reach out. And I then found out later that they did make some changes for her and put her, you know, they got her taken care of and stuff. So, but.
And were you asked to, as the patient also had wounds, were you asked to take care of the wounds at all or inspect the wounds in that?
No, I was not involved in that. That's why nursing was involved in that.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Florence, I wanted to just have you clarify, because I'm kind of hearing two different things. In your interview, I'm hearing that the patient didn't want to get up and answer the door at that point because she was too tired. But in your documentation, I'm reading she was unable to get up because of a lack of strength. So it's two kind of completely different things. One of them, you know, what you documented in your note tells me that that is a change in status. But what you're telling us in your interview, I would probably say you're right. It's not a change in status. So which one of those is the case?
Well, like I said, I mean, again, I documented that note as best that I could and put it in, you know, succinct manner as far as, but based on that was that she just wasn't able to get up. And like I said, she conveyed to me that she, you know, was tired and, you know, and again, I don't know if she didn't want me in the house. I don't know like I said, I don't know her mental status of why she didn't, you know, answer the door. But what I got in response and in what I documented was that she was tired and she was lacking strength. And I may have worded it not in, you know, the best way of that, of the situation, but she wasn't saying that she was going to get up out of the chair.
Okay. So what she said in your interview is really how you felt.
Yeah. Again, I may have not documented it, you know, verbatim of like what she said, but again, when I was told about this patient and she needed time to, you know, get up from the chair to unlock the door, that kind of was the scenario. It was late in the afternoon. Most people at that age, they are taxed and they're not, you know, they are tired and stuff. So again, I don't know the mindset of the patient. I don't know if she didn't want me in her house because last visit, you know, wanted to have her garment changed and she could have been offended by it. Like I said, I just don't know what her mindset was, but she was not answering the door for me.
Yeah. Okay. And then as far as the aspect of the note where it talks about care coordination, so it says that you did conference with the PT supervisor, but obviously this was not after the situation, as you mentioned, but did you have a conversation with them prior to seeing the patient that day, whether through text message, whether through phone call, whatever the case might be? When did that coordination take place?
I would say that was my note that I did at 9 o'clock. That's what I looked at as my coordinating.
Okay, so then that leads to my next question. That section of your note, is that meant to act as a place where you're documenting an actual conversation with the PT, or is that meant?
I believe that's how the software works. That's what I was told on the software.
Okay. So basically it's you put in the conference with the PT and then it puts in the PT's name on there. Is that what it is?
Right. As far as it's a note, I believe how it gets relayed. I don't know how the software works, but from my understanding of it is when you put the person that you're coordinating, it's just saying that like they can see my note, they can see the patient visit and, you know, just see the note in general is how I looked at the software.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You're on mute, Dr. King.
But the dogs are barking, so I was tuning them out. I do have a question, Ms. Florence. Was the PT for your other patients, were they doing the fourth visit rule of every four visits they're seeing your patients and would?
Yeah, because I was very aware of that because there were a couple times that I had to call the office and say, no, I can't see the patient because of the fourth visit situation. So bringing the schedulers had difficulties sometimes with the fourth visit, but I'm very aware of the fourth visit.
Okay. So you made sure you stuck with that.
Yeah.
Thanks. And after you saw this patient, I'm just curious, it's just your opinion, but you saw this patient on the 11th. The eval was on the 6th. After you saw her, did you feel like she was appropriate to delegate to a PTA?
I would say, like, you know, based on my overall caseload, there were some patients that I felt were kind of, I hate to say the word, but dumped onto the PTA and could have used higher level of, you know, with the DPTs or the PTs. And, but again, in doing this for so many years, you know, I feel confident in my skill set. Mm-hmm. But usually too, if there is something that I don't feel comfortable with, I will reach out to the PTs and say, hey, you know, I don't feel comfortable, or can you give me some education or instruction on how to handle this and stuff.
Okay, great. Tell me a little bit about, I think in your response there was, is this something about that you were surprised that there was a question about you billing for the education, the time you spent with the daughter, and that where you've worked other places that you could bill for that time?
Right.
Can you just tell me a little bit about your understanding about, like, billing for things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I know that, again, because the daughter was out of state and she didn't have any immediate caregivers in the home, I just felt that all the education that I was giving her, be it the safety, the lock boxes in general, or giving her Gabby's number for some sort of direction to head into if she needed help with placement or some sort of guidance that, you know, that service provides and stuff. I felt that everything that I gave was, you know, helpful for her, because she did reach out to Gabby, and but she didn't utilize her, because from the conversation I had last was that they were trying to get her to move to, I think it was Texas or something. And so again, I just feel as a PTA, I may not have like all the skill set or, you know, the education that the PTs have, but I do know that I'm a good resource, because I do have, you know, ways of helping the patient find, if there's a need and they want to have, you know, it's like give, you know, it's like giving a horse water, but if, you know, you can't make them drink, but at least they can have the resources. And I do that a lot with my patients. If they, you know, if I see that there's a need for some, you know, for some need that they may not know that they can get and that sort of thing. So, and again, it's resources. And like I said, it's putting the patient in the best situation that I feel that I can. And, you know, like I said, I do care about my patients. I just don't go in and go through it and just be like, you know, and walk out. Because on that visit, if you really think about it, I could have just said a missed visit, or the way that they're making it out to be, like I went in and put all this fraudulent stuff and the visit never happened. But I was there. I was out in that heat and I was trying to figure out how to, you know, to at least try and get to see the patient.
Thank you.
And,
okay, thanks so much.
Okay.
Any further questions? Ms. Florence, would you like to say anything very briefly in closing?
Just that, you know, in doing this for, you know, 24 years, it is definitely something that I know that I love to do, and I love helping people, and I love, you know, being able to put them in a position that they can recover from all sorts of illnesses and mishaps and whatnot. And like I said, I love what I do. And for this to happen has hit me since the time I got notification of it. I have not had a day where I did not think of, like, why is this happening? Especially when I know what I put into my patients, and to be accused of substandard care when I know I put more so than they know. And especially when these people who are judging me I have had like minutes of interaction with them, and for them to assume all these things instead of knowing that I do a good job with my patients. And again, some patients may not like me, but I still do my job.
Great. Thank you.
So the board's going to move into deliberations now.
Couple of the things that are catching, I'm getting caught up on, but some are what Giovanni spoke about. I mean, is it truly a change in status, or was this patient just refusing? Do you know what I mean? I mean, the daughter called her. She spoke to her. She wasn't concerned about her. She didn't call 911. She didn't ask the PTA to call 911. She didn't seem concerned at all about her mom's status. And so it's unfortunate that the PTA documented unable to, as opposed to refused to, or unable to motivate her to come to the door, right? Mm-hmm. Versus unable to, because I'm looking at the notes and, well, first of all, someone called out some questions about contact guard assist with a front wheel walker for this lady. I don't know. This is a lady who sounds like she should not have been living alone. We know this, right? And that is, we know this happens. I have a mother-in-law we faced the same thing with, so I get that. But this is a PTA who's trying to do her visit, and the patient, for all intents and purposes, refused. Because she just said, I don't want to get up. I don't want to come open the door. I'm tired. And so I'm kind of stuck on that, whether it's truly a change of status, right? And so I don't know. I wish there was a little more emergent from the PT as well as the PTA to the director that this patient is high risk for neglect. You know, if they're sitting in their soiled clothing and unable to clean themselves and unable to manage themselves well, right? That should have been coming from the PT, backed up by the PTA, but the PT should have gone straight to the director and said, we have a problem with this patient. They are not safe to be home, and we need to get some resources in there. So I'm disappointed that I didn't see that in the PT documentation anywhere.
Well, so, and from the home health agency as well. If she had a caregiver going over on a regular basis, yeah, and the nursing going
and a nurse.
In, there should have been multiple.
Yep. Adult protective services. Someone should have gotten some resources in there for this lady. But go ahead. Sorry.
I was just agreeing, but I feel, yeah.
Go ahead, Dr. Basile.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. No, I agree with you. And in fact, as I'm looking through these records, I think I have, to be honest, I have many more concerns about the PT than I do about this woman.
I agree.
And that, you know, that makes me wonder if maybe we need to look at that. And frankly, the other half of this is that, you know, even the home health agency makes this allegation that there's fraudulent records, and then they refuse to show us the records.
Yeah.
Right.
And that really irks me, to be honest. I don't know that there's anything we can do. You know, we've had this discussion multiple times about the fact that these agencies don't want to participate, but I'm not inclined to hold that against Ms. Florence. But I am really concerned about the PT. And I am really concerned about what may be in these records that they don't want to share with us. So that may be an item for discussion as to what options we have to ensure that we receive those records. But my inclination right now is I agree with you, Dr. King. I'm not seeing, I think she was really reasonable in what she did. It looks like she's trying to act in the best interest of this patient. And my concern is really above her, you know, pay grade, for lack of a better word. My initial inclination is to let this go and open an investigation into the PT.
Yeah, our whole purpose is to try and protect the public, and I don't see any evidence of how she did not do that.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think she did her due diligence, honestly. So, any other? Okay.
It's okay. Feel free. Any other discussion or concerns? Anyone like to make a motion?
I would move to dismiss.
I'd second.
Mm-hmm. Any discussion on this?
Giovanni, do we need to make a second motion to open an investigation into the PT?
Yeah, that would be a secondary motion.
And I would second that motion.
All right. So, Judy, I think we're ready for the motion to dismiss.
Sorry, I was muted. It's okay. Moved and seconded to dismiss case 2377, Jelaine Florence, PTA. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Florence.
Thank you.
So I would move then, based on our discussion, that we open an investigation into Lee Hall and PT.
Second.
And as a part of that discussion, and I don't know, this may be executive session stuff, but I would like to know what our options are for enforcing the subpoena for the records of, at least the records of DC.
Mm-hmm. I'd like additional records as well.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, I think what we can do is open up the complaint, conduct the investigation, issue the subpoenas, and if for some reason they don't comply with the subpoenas, we can bring that issue back to you separately as part of the initial review of the investigation to see what our options are.
So, Mr. Harris, my concern is, if I'm reading this correctly, I think we've already subpoenaed the records for DC and they've refused to comply. Am I misreading that?
No, and that's in that case, Josh. And so what I'm suggesting is, because now we've dismissed it,
we need to do it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Am I okay to leave?
Yes. Thank you so much. Yes. Okay.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. So I've messed up our discussion, but I think we have a motion.
Okay. Yes. Any further discussion on the motion to open a complaint?
Will you let me know how many records you would like, please, and if there's any specifics you want with the records?
I would defer to Dr. King on that. She has more experience choosing what and how many records we want. But I agree with her that we should get some additional records.
And you do want one of them to attempt to be DC again?
DW.
Yeah,
DW.
I think we should.
We have DW.
I think it's DC that they
did. DC.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I would say what, at least one of them to include DC. And then, I don't know, Dr. King, what do you think?
I'd like to see three.
Okay.
If that's not too unreasonable to ask. And ideally three that the PT and the patient was also seen by a PTA. So similar situation where there's delegation to a PTA to continue to see a patient that this PT evaluated.
Yeah. Okay. And three including DC or DC plus three others?
What do you think? Probably DC and three others. Sorry.
That's fine. I just want to make sure I have it.
Yeah, we should. Just look for, yeah.
Yep, that's fine. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Do we need to outline the allegations as part of this?
We probably.
Go ahead.
I think our initial concern is substandard care. We could just start there.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we see records, we could certainly, I think, add to that. If the investigators are finding evidence of other allegations, they can make that recommendation in their investigative report.
Okay. That was going to be my question because I feel like there might be some supervision issues going on here as well.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion?
Okay, I think we're ready when you are, Judy.
Okay, I believe I caught it all, so correct me if I'm wrong. It's been moved and seconded to open a complaint against Lee Holland PT for substandard care and to include in that investigation a minimum of 3 records that involve cases in which the patient was seen by the PT and interventions delegated to a PTA. Is that accurate?
I believe so.
Okay. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, so moving on. Are we good on the recording, Judy, or do you want to stop and start it again?
I believe we're potentially good for this next case.
Okay. So we are going to be moving on here to number 11, case 2389, Michael Webster, and is Mr. Webster and his counsel present?
I believe Ms. Patain is here. Yes, there she is.
Good morning. This is Cynthia Patain. Mr. Webster was not able to attend today, but I am here.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to move that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second. So it's been moved and seconded to go into executive session for legal advice. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer? Mr. Greer, you're muted.
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes. So the board members will exit this call and attend executive session. Everyone else is welcome to stay in this call. The board will return as soon as executive session is over. The recording will stop at 11:08.